Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
And welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, brought to you once again from Marylebone Station, where it is about 400 degrees warmer than the last time we were in Marylebone Station, David, when I was wearing my Eskimo outfit, because as far as I'm concerned, spring has sprung. It's over 10 degrees. It's February in London, but I don't care. The birds are singing. It's all great. I play tennis twice this weekend. It's spring. It's all great. And I'm not even wearing a coat. So isn't it? I mean, it's all just wonderful.
How did your tennis go? Did you get any W's, as they say?
Oh, that's a horrible expression. It was a non-competitive hit around. I mean, to be honest, the dilapidated state of local tennis courts, Wandsworth Council, if you are watching or listening, pay attention. The courts at Wandsworth Park. Given the poor state of them, I don't think it would have been fair to anyone to play any kind of competitive match. So we just did our best.
So you're blaming your performance on the court surface. Was the speed not suitable for a serve volley chip charger like yourself?
Volley chip charger. I actually used my freebie balls from my ATP World Tour Finals goodie bag, and at the gym today, which for people watching on Periscope, as I'll mention once again, is why my face is purple and my hair is wet. At the gym today, I used my ATP World Tour Finals personalised towel, which, as great as it is, I now realise it makes me look like a real idiot having a personalised towel embroidered with my own name in the gym. It's not very cool, is it? Well, thanks, ATP, you know, very much, but it's not cool.
Well, it kind of is cool until somebody sort of just... I remember once playing tennis with something that had my name on it when I was about 12, and somebody just...
Oh, you're 12, it's all right.
Somebody walked past and said, Dave! Yeah! Oh, I've got it on my chest. Right.
We start every podcast now with a David Law anecdote, don't we? That's becoming sort of... I'm going to start writing it into the agenda. Anyway, we have an agenda for today. It's very exciting. It starts with a roundup of Doha last week. We'll come on to Karolina Pliskova, the champion, in a minute. But first of all, what a horrendous week of weather. The organisers in Qatar must have been wondering what on earth they did to anger the weather gods last week, because there really was a point, I think, on Thursday or Friday. I think Friday, which was semi-finals day in Doha, because they finished the event on Saturday, where they were genuinely contemplating the prospect of not completing the event. Apparently, in the WTA rules, it states that you have one day beyond your schedule to get the event completed, and if you can't do so within that time, you have to finish up without a champion, which is an extraordinary thought. I can see David's mind whirring. You're trying to go back through the annals of your mind and think whether that's ever happened before. But they were planning for that eventuality. Luckily, the rain stopped long enough on Saturday just for them to get the finals played. Pliskova, Wozniacki played both their semi-finals, quarterfinals and semi-finals in the same day on Friday. It was an extraordinary week of weather and tennis, wasn't it, David?
It was, and I felt very sorry for them, to be honest. And it did, you know, you talk about memories of whether it's ever happened before. I can remember once, I think, cancelling a doubles tournament during a tournament because of bad weather. But I've been in many situations where the rain has been so bad, whether it be certainly at Queen's a couple of times, in Gstaad, in 2000 in Gstaad in Switzerland, I remember we were... I was supposed to leave on Saturday after the final. I left on Tuesday, and I had to go straight to the tournament in Umag. Wonderful tournament by the beach in Croatia in Umag. Ended up meeting my wife that week, so that was good. However, in Gstaad, in Switzerland, we would have press conference day after day with the tournament supervisor, where you would just where the questions were, what happens if? And I used to say I wasn't really popular actually, because in backstage with the officials, I would say, what happens if it just doesn't stop raining, like for weeks? What do we do? And nobody really wanted to consider that eventuality at all. But I can't think of any time when literally you haven't got through it eventually. But there were times during the Doha event, and you know they were getting sandstorms in Dubai as well, and rain, that I did wonder whether Doha was going to actually finish. They did really well to finish it.
Yeah, it was a real fight to the finish line. Karolina Pliskova, the champion, 6-3, 6-4 in the final over Caroline Wozniacki. We'll come on to her in a minute. But Pliskova, I mean... The consensus now is completely... I mean, it's not building, it seems to be built to me that she is, at the very least, a Grand Slam champion in waiting, quite possibly a world number one in waiting.
Well, ordinarily at this point, I would quote the results of a pole vault that I ran a few days ago on this very subject, but you did the agenda today and refused to put it on. So
I mean, the stats speak for themselves. She's 15-1 this year. That's her second title. Just that loss to Mirjana Lucic-Baroni in the quarterfinals of the Australian Open. She came to Doha straight from Fed Cup, where she helped Czech Republic to beat Spain. I mean, she's an iron woman of tennis now, isn't she?
And I think probably we haven't given it as much attention as we normally would, because she didn't go to the very final stages of the Australian Open. Because she lost in the quarterfinals, we've ended up talking more about other people. I mean, I feel as though Grigor Dimitrov's got a similar record, but actually not quite as good if you look at it in terms of sheer numbers, and yet he's got a lot more attention because he ended up going to the semis of the Australian, because he very nearly beat Rafael Nadal. But yeah, I mean, that one match aside,
is she a Grand Slam champion and or a future world number one?
That's a very good question. I think I asked on Twitter, pole vault was, is she the next one? And I said, obviously, no, it's Garbiñe Muguruza, because I don't want to betray the prediction that I made at the start of the year. However, I think if you put the two of those two side by side right now, that's a very interesting question, isn't it? Which of them is going to reach world number one, if either first? I mean, Pliskova, yeah, I definitely think Pliskova will win a Grand Slam.
She's
definitely
surely the safer bet. Safer than Muguruza. I'm not saying Muguruza won't go there. If I had to bet my life on somebody, it would be Pliskova. Muguruza is an enigma, isn't
yeah,
she? She's
Muguruza
an enigma.
Has won a slam. Muguruza has won a slam. That's different, isn't it? I mean, you know, she's...
We're talking about... Well, I thought we were talking about number one.
I understand that, but when she got to her final, Muguruza, she didn't... She won the title. Now, Pliskova, yeah, I mean, I think she will win a slam. But I think that there's more unknown about her, isn't there?
I'm not sure there is. What's unknown about Pliskova? Other than, you know, the secrets of her past and things to do with her personal... But I think she's very much exactly what it says on the tin. And we know things have clicked for her now. I'm not saying there won't be ups and downs, but it's the worst possible spin on it is it's a pretty one-dimensional game. What I mean, but it's a blooming good one-dimensional game, but there's no plan B for her, is there? It is what it is, and most of the time she knocks people off the court and it works brilliantly. What don't we know about, what are we yet to be convinced about by Karolina Pliskova?
Whether she can keep on doing it in slams, because who did she lose to at the...
Mirjana Lucic-Baroni, which becomes even more of a shock in retrospect, doesn't it? Now that, you know, that's her only loss of the year to Mirjana Lucic-Baroni.
But as much as I have untold respect for Mirjana Lucic-Baroni, that is a poor loss against a player ranked, you know, way down, relatively speaking. That is not a match that Pliskova should have lost when she's in that sort of form, is it?
Yeah, but I mean, if we're comparing her to Muguruza, I mean, Muguruza's had as many, if not more, surprise losses. I mean, she was battered off the court by Coco Vandeweghe in Australia, wasn't she? I mean, I can't tell whether you're playing devil's advocate or whether you agree with me. I mean, Muguruza is an enigma, isn't she? She could beat everybody in straight sets one week, or she could put in a horror performance and look like she doesn't really care about tennis at all. You just don't know what you're going to get.
True. I definitely feel that Pliskova is producing it more regularly now, and actually I think she's got her scheduling right. I mean, I think it's given even more importance because she's such a Fed Cup devotee. She will always play. She has to get that scheduling right, because certainly for a while in 2015 she was playing she was the team of women's tennis. She was playing way too much.
We'll come on to Dominic Thiem later, by the way.
We will. But no, look, I think Pliskova, I'm not 100% convinced she will get to world number one. I think she will definitely win a slam. I'm not convinced about world number one yet.
That's very interesting. Very interesting. Because you are... I give credit to your opinion. I'm not 100% convinced she will be, but the wealth of opinion does seem to be very strongly that she definitely will get to world number one. So it's interesting to hear you say differently. David Wozniacki, she was in the final. I have to say, personally, I was so delighted to see her doing what she does best and doing what made her famous so well, proving and reminding everybody that she's first and foremost a very, very good tennis player. Everybody has their own various feelings on the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition, of which she was a major feature this week, as were Jeannie Bouchard and a few other players. But personally, I don't enjoy seeing tennis players in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. I don't vilify them for that. I don't hold it against them. I hold it against the people that think that the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition is a good idea. So each to their own. If that's what she wants to do, that's fine. But I'm more pleased to see her reaching the final of a tennis tournament than I am to see her on the centrefold of Sports Illustrated.
I would share those views. And actually, she is Jo Konta thrashing aside, stringing together a lot of good results. And, you know, I think you have to give those two, Wozniacki and Pliskova, enormous credit for coming through that week in which you've got this awful weather. I mean, it must be so hard to keep focused and to keep patience and to keep coming out and playing, and then it rains and all the rest of it. And, you know, those are two great professionals.
Now we're going to talk about Angelique Kerber, because she lost very early to Daria Kazatkina, her second loss to Kazatkina of the year. But I think, first of all, we should check out of our Periscope, A, because I've already talked about Kerber during our technical issues, and B, because we want all the many millions of people tuning in to have a reason still to download the podcast, don't we?
Yeah, and all the best stuff's coming up on the podcast after this. We've been holding fire, but anyway.
Is it? I'm not sure it is, but anyway, it has been a great pleasure to have you all participating on our live pole vault. No, Catherine, I'm a Reading fan too. Come on, you ours. Are we going to get promoted? That's a big old question, that is. I think I'm a pessimist when it comes to Reading. I see playoff misery in our near future, I'm afraid. But playoffs are fun while they last, aren't they? But it has been an absolute pleasure to have you join us on the Periscope. We're going to carry on recording our regular audio podcast. Please still download it. There's probably another half hour of tennis-related drivel to come from us. It's going to be great. And we will be doing a Periscope again soon, when hopefully I will have a less purple face. Goodbye.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
We'll look ahead to Dubai in a minute and talk about what's been happening in the ATP Tour and lots of other stuff as well. But first of all, Angelique Kerber, another early loss for her. A second loss of the year to Daria Kazakina. No shame in that. I know Kazakina is a fantastic player. She was drawn against Wozniacki, incidentally, in the first round of Dubai. She has lost that, but that's a tricky old draw. A fantastic draw for the organisers to have in the first round. What is going on with Angelique Kerber? Is it exactly the same malaise that we saw in her in Australia? Does the fact that it's extended beyond Australia and beyond the obvious strain of having to defend a Grand Slam title for the first time, does the fact that this is continuing worry you, David?
Yeah, it kind of does on her behalf. In fact, the whole thing is all a bit of a concern, just because she doesn't look as though she's enjoying it enormously. And, you know, I don't want to get over dramatic, but it feels a bit like Leicester City in the Premier League, you know, winning the title last year, and then they look like they might get relegated. If you follow British football, that's an extraordinary story of a wonderful moment and then a real struggle thereafter. Now, obviously, these are embryonic stages of 2017, so she may just pull it together. She's a great professional. I mean, she's, you know, this is somebody who hasn't just out of the blue, flash in the pan like Leicester, gone and won the big one. She's been a top 10 player for many, many years. She's been top 5 now, and she's been a Slam semi-finalist. But still, last year was out of the blue. It was not expected for us to be talking about her winning two Slams, reaching the final of a third, and being number one in the world. She doesn't look like she belongs right now. But that can change. I mean, I hope for her sake it does. And also, I still think she's a really decent person. I mean, I don't know her very well, but just the few dealings I've had with her and the way she carries herself, I think she can be a sore loser at times, like most people can. But her general personality, I think she's a really, really decent person. So I hope it comes good for her.
I do too, but I'd agree with you. This is almost more of a concern than what happened in Australia. That felt so expected to me. You know, I harped on about it at the time on the podcast, just seeing her body language and how little she seemed to be enjoying being there, the obvious fatigue in her eyes. It looked like she just wanted to get the defence of her first Grand Slam title out of the way. But, you know, she didn't have an awful lot to defend in Doha, and she's going into Dubai this week, where she does have the chance, in theory, to go back to world number one, to retopple Serena Williams. She'd have to win the event. She is the top seed, but I don't think it's too extravagant a claim to say it's highly unlikely that she will do that, because she has played 5 times in Dubai and she has only ever won one match, and she's coming in there on horrible form. So it seems unlikely that she will turn around that horrible record in Dubai this week, this year.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because you're looking for little moments where it might turn for her, and it kind of feels like it needs to happen quite soon, because, you know, yes, you've got Indian Wells and Miami. Maybe it'll happen at one of those. She hasn't got the greatest record in the world on clay. She's done very, very well in Stuttgart. That's a tournament. I think she's won there for the last 2 years, so maybe that'll be the place.
But crucially, she has a lot less to defend on clay. First round loss in Paris, the pressure will be off there, and the fact that she's well known to be less good on clay, she will be going into that portion of the season with less pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to ascribe what things, reasons for losses of form without knowing. I don't know her, and I haven't spoken to her in depth about it. I've got my suspicions as to what it is. I think it is a large part of the reasons we've talked about. But, you know, somehow she's got to just play tennis, just do what got her there somehow. Because if she does do what got her there, she'll start winning tennis matches again, even though I think she is a real scalp now. I think players look at her and think, actually, she doesn't hit the ball that hard. If I play really well, I can coke her, Vandeweghe her. You know, it's that kind of approach. But if Kerber goes back to doing what got her there, she will start winning again.
Well, as you said earlier, we hope that she does. She is in the top half of the draw with Dominika Sibulkova, Svitolina, Elena Vesnina. The bottom half of the draw is where it's really stacked. Pliskova, Radvanska, Muguruza, Strytsova, the defending champion, incidentally, Isara Irani. She beat Strytsova in the final last year. So it's a very, very strong draw. Obviously, the absence of Serena Williams is gaping, but we're very used to that at these sorts of events. We expect to see her in Indian Wells in a couple of weeks, though, don't we?
And also, Dubai has its problems, doesn't it, in terms of pullouts, and it's been the case for the last couple of years. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, players cannot play everything, and the ones that play Fed Cup as well, it's a big ask for them.
Dominic Thiem is trying.
Dominic Thiem is trying. And actually, you know, fair play to Pliskova and Muguruza. They keep playing. But it's not easy. We've seen Jo Konta pull out in Dubai. She obviously had a very wearing week last week. You know, we heard about it from Anki Ottavong. She played four singles matches in 4 days. She also played a doubles on the final day. She's ended up with a foot problem. And, you know, something's going to have to give somewhere, you think, in a calendar. And obviously Indian Wells, Miami around the corner, great opportunities for massive points and prestige as well. So it's a shame though for Dubai, because it's been depleted, and that's a Premier 5 event.
Yeah, it's a strange portion of the season, this one, because you've got these really great events, and they are great events. You know, Dubai, the men's and women's ones, is fantastic. You know, Doha, they do a very good job, the organisation there, Rotterdam likewise, but they are, in terms of sort of the context, the narrative of the tennis calendar, they are sort of slightly placeholder events, aren't they? I mean, in your head, the average tennis fan will think, you know, Australian Swing, Australian Open, and then Indian Wells, Miami, and then clay court season, and then a little bit of a lull when I would say there are some other placeholder type events, and then you get into US Open, you know, the second American hard court swing, and then you're into indoors. That's the story of a tennis season, and these events here, this sort of mini indoor / outdoor in the Middle East swing, doesn't quite fit in with anything, does it? I think it's quite difficult for the lay person, the non-hardcore tennis fan, to engage with it, as harsh as that sounds.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, and they've, you know, it makes sense in a way that it goes to a new Wales off the back of another hardcore tournament. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of tennis, and I understand everybody wants their piece of it. Thank goodness that they do. Thank goodness that the Middle East wants to put on big tennis tournaments, and they are very well run too. But yeah, I mean, they're suffering at the moment, partly because of the weather and partly because of the pullouts.
Doha, incidentally, seems to have plans to build a brand new 12,000-seater stadium with roof, which will be completed by 2020 or 2021 or something. They're not short of cash in that part of the world, are they? So we look forward to a roof in Doha before too long. On the ATP side of things, he's been getting very excited, David, about Ryan Harrison. Those are words I never thought I'd say. Tell us what Ryan Harrison has done this week. Little old Ryan Harrison.
Well, he's won his first ever tournament in Memphis. And, I mean, I've followed his career quite closely over the years, because he was one of the youngest players to ever to play a professional tournament, to my knowledge. He was a really young teenager. And then he had his sort of breakthrough period where he came on the scene, I suppose, with Dimitrov and Raonic and Nishikori. It was kind of that era. But it, and I mean, America, after Roddick, he was the one they were talking about. He was the next one, I suppose, after Isner and Querrey. But, you know, more was expected of him. And this is kind of before Jack Sock came along. But it just didn't happen. I mean, he had some real difficulties, did Ryan Harrison. And not least, I mean, if you actually look at a period of his draws over about 18 months, he kept on drawing, like, Novak Djokovic first round, Andy Murray, people like that, in the biggest tournaments of the lot. And you're likely to lose them, no matter if you are playing well. And he did lose them. And the problem is, when you're in that situation, you then, I think, you find it really hard to actually get any momentum going, to get any points on the board, to get into the draws that you want to get into. And we've seen it with Dan Evans now. He's had his best form at the tournaments where the biggest, most points are available, and suddenly he's shot up the rankings. Now he gets into the big tournaments, and, you know, unless you play all of those lower ones and just win the lot, I mean, you find it really hard, I think, to get up there. And he played Memphis, he didn't lose a set, he played really well, and he was really emotional afterwards in his on-court speech. And, you know, good for him that he won that, because it would, given what he's kind of gone through on the court over the last 2 or 3 years, where he's just been kind of derided by people have just mocked his lack of progress. So
he's become a bit of a punchline, hasn't he? Which is a shame, and sort of the poster boy for unfulfilled, overhyped talent, I suppose. Which is, you know, it's not his fault. He's not quite talented enough to be a top 10 player, is it?
And also, the first person who jumped on Twitter to congratulate him was Andy Roddick, who he's trained a lot with. I know, thinks a lot of him, and has always admired his work ethic, if nothing else. You know, he said, this guy gives everything he's got. I don't know Harrison well. I've interviewed him once or twice. I think he perhaps ended up suffering results-wise a little bit due to his own hype as well. In the interview I did with him at the Australian Open, I think 3 years ago, He just came out, I mean, maybe it's 4 years ago, in fact, it was 2013, I think. He came out and he said, I think I can be world number one. And it's great to kind of want to achieve that and believe you might be able to achieve that. But he was kind of walking the walk before he'd actually done anything, really. And I think that must lead to disappointment when you don't get the results.
It's a tricky one, that, isn't it? Because our Western culture, I'm going to go off on one now, our Western culture of reality shows, particularly, it has to be said, in America, is, you know, you've got to dream big. You know, if you dream it, you can be it. That's what you're told, isn't it? If you don't dream big, then you never have a chance of achieving it. So that's what sort of the overhyped media is telling you, isn't it? That, you know, no matter how many knockbacks you get, no matter what your level of ability, even if you walk into an audition with Simon Cowell and you can't sing a note, you're supposed to walk out and go, I'll show them, I know better, I believe in myself, and that's enough. So it's a tricky one, isn't it? You're not going to get there if you don't believe in yourself, if you don't believe that you can do it. There's nobody that ever got there by going, oh, I'm really not sure. You know, look at Sasha Zverev, he sure as heck believes he's going to be a world number one day, and he probably will be. So it's a really tricky one. I mean, yeah, obviously it looks silly if you don't do it and you end up doing a Ryan Harrison for a few years, but equally you look silly if you don't believe.
Yeah, but I'm pleased for him, you know. I mean, he obviously meant the world to him. And side note, his opponent, Nicholas Basilashvili.
Basilashvili. Conqueror of Dominic Thiem.
Oh, yeah. Did you see what...
Not that that's anything to shout about these days.
You should see what he was wearing. I mean, wow. I got widely mocked for raising attention to it on Twitter last night, because basically he's got this brand, which I've since discovered, I think is called Hydrogen. And apparently, I should have known, according to Twitter, that Simone Bellelli has been wearing it for many years, and Fabio Fanini's been wearing it for the last few months. Anyway, it's effectively a skull is the logo.
Oh, yeah, I have seen this, yeah.
I must admit, I I don't think I have seen Fabio Fognini play tennis for the last 6 months. So, yeah, guilty as
fuck. And he's been in many televised matches, has he?
No, so anyway, Twitter was aghast that I would dare to not have watched the lower leagues of tennis and not know this already. But anyway.
We're too big time for that here on the too big time to watch Fabio Fognini toiling around in the lower leagues.
Apparently I am, yeah. So anyway, I thought it was particularly jarring to see this this skull for a logo, but my goodness, it was eye-catching. Have a look at it if you get a chance.
Well, we're talking about it, aren't we? So job done for Hydrogen, not an official sponsor of the Tennis Podcast. We've had Alexander Dolgopolov toppling Kei Nishikori to win the title in Buenos Aires. Now, you tweeted that you would pay a heck of a lot of money or something to watch that match. I'm not saying it's not a good match, but that wasn't what I thought when I saw that match up. I thought, God, that looks like an ordeal watching that match. David Law, it's a shame we're not still periscoping, because David Law is looking at me aghast.
I'm quite hurt, actually. I mean, I love watching Dolgopolov play.
Yeah, but Dolgopolov, I'm talking about that matchup, Dolgopolov against Nishikori. When will the point ever end?
No.
David looks wounded.
No, I don't agree in the slight. I really don't. I'm really surprised you said that, because they are both shot makers. Neither one of them is more than 6 feet tall. I think they're both 5'10". And they both play quickly, and, you know, neither of them have got a huge serve. Actually, Dolgopolov really has got a good serve. He hits a lot of aces. I just love...
Incredibly quick motion. It gets a lot of disguise on that serve, doesn't he?
Both of those players are shot makers with power that doesn't look like it has any obvious starting point. You look at them and you think, well, where's your bulging muscles? Where's your massive wingspan? Neither of them have got either of those things.
You said that to their faces. Oh. Where are your bulging muscles?
Yeah, if I can see them from up on high at 6 feet 7 inches tall, then I will tell them. But I find them so exciting to watch both of them. And, I mean, against each other. Oh, I mean, I would pay money to watch that, unquestionably.
David is having a fanboy moment just at the prospect of those two playing one another again. So congratulations to Alexander Dolgopolov. Title for him in Buenos Aires. Joe Wilfred Tsonga won the title in Rotterdam. What a nice sight to see Joe Wilfred Tsonga still winning titles. I don't want to get, you know, he's not a spent force or anything, but he's certainly not being talked about as a potential Grand Slam champion, really, anymore, is he? So it's nice to see him reminding people that he's still there. He's still a contender.
It is. I do think with Joe Wilfred Tsonga, and I tweeted this last night upon thinking this, and ran a pole vault, which I'm not allowed to talk about.
There's no point in doing the podcast, because you've already tweeted your every thought about everything prior to recording. There are no secrets of the mind of David Law.
Just engage in conversation. But basically, Tsonga, has he under-delivered on his talent? You know, you look at what he's capable of and how that racket looks like a lollipop in his hands, because he's so big and he's powerful. And I watched that match he played against Dan Evans. I know I keep bringing up Dan Evans, but, you know, okay, Evans won the first set, but he manhandled the guy, and the talent. He was handling the best stuff Evans could throw at him, and he was just brushing him aside. And then he played against Stan Wawrinka in the next round, and he didn't win a set. I think he played quite well for the first part of it, and then they had that falling out, and then it went all wrong. But
you looking at me?
You know, you think of that match that he played against Nadal in the semi-finals of the Australian Open when he reached the final, and some of the other performances he's had on grass, and he beat Federer from two sets to love down. Don't you think that perhaps he's just not bothered enough whether he's a champion? I mean, he's an amazing talent, a lovely guy, incidentally, a really lovely guy. I've met him on a number of occasions doing what we do for a living, and he couldn't be nicer, more charming, more helpful in interviews, more helpful for organisers. He doesn't turn anybody down for autographs, and he's just a good bloke, right? But don't you think that he's kind of just... He's satisfied more or less where he is, really. He's happy. He's happy. He's, He's got a good life. He's obviously earning plenty of money. People love him. But do you not think that if he was desperate enough to be a champion, that he might be able to get more out of himself?
I think perhaps week in, week out, he's not desperate. Perhaps he doesn't have the gene which gives you the drive to be a world number one, the drive to maximise your ranking. But I think when he gets on the court in a big match, big time situation, he wants it as much as anybody else. And I know it's not about wanting it in that moment, it's about wanting it in the gym weeks before that moment. And I don't know how hard he works off the court. I've never seen him look... I've never seen him lose a match because I felt he's not fit enough or not up to it. I mean, he tends to lose the big matches because as great a tennis player as he is, he does have limitations. And the limitations, I think, are in his brain. He doesn't play the right shots at the right moments. He's a low percentage player, and when that works, it's the most swashbuckling, brilliant to watch tennis you can wish for. And when it doesn't, it looks like, oh, Joe, why have you picked that shot? Why have you played that? Why have you gone for a forehand on the run winner over the highest part of the net and break point down? You know, what are you playing at? And that's what makes him great, but it's also what makes him not quite good enough to be a Grand Slam champion. He, you know, a multiple Grand Slam semi-finalist and a Grand Slam finalist, I think, is about right for him. And I don't think he's got anything to regret. Personally.
So don't you think, therefore, that if maybe 5 years ago, remember when he worked with Roger Rashid for a while, didn't he? But remember, imagine if he decided to get a super coach, if he got a Lendl, right, or somebody like that, 5 years ago, could they have got that last few percent out of him by teaching him those... it's almost like... There's a bit of the Dimitrovs from the last few years about him. Can do so many things, but doesn't kind of end up doing any of them, really. You know, just reacts almost to what's going on the court. Whereas Danny Valverde, we've talked about it in the last couple of weeks, has suddenly cottoned on, right. And he told us on the podcast during the Australian Open, he said, right, these are your strengths. This is what we're going to focus on. Your serve, your forehand, your movement, right? That's what's going to win you tennis matches first of all. Then we'll worry about the rest. And he's worked out patterns of play to win him points reliably. And I feel as though Songa, maybe he could have got more out of himself, maybe with the right guidance and maybe with the right killer instinct almost.
You could be right, possibly, but I mean, Songa has an obvious weakness in his game, which Dimitrov doesn't. The backhand is a weakness, certainly relative to the forehand. It's attackable. You can walk onto the court against Songa and think, right, I'm just going to pummel this guy's backhand, which Dimitrov doesn't have. Skill-wise, Dimitrov is a better tennis player. I know that doesn't necessarily count for anything, but in terms of, you know, tricks in the book, you give it to Dimitrov, and yes, they both have the same issue of the gene, that instinctive choosing the right shot at the right time. For me, that's such an underrated feature of the top tennis players, choosing the right shot at the right time. The tennis IQ, that is, I mean, it's what, when you watch Dimitrov, not so much of late, it has to be said, we don't need to get excited about Dimitrov again this week, because he did have a slightly disappointing loss in Rostov, didn't he? He just ran out of steam, but anyway, still a good week. I thought he was going to come back and win that one, but anyway,
I was live on Periscope.
You can't get enough of Periscope. But anyway, what I was going to say was, sometimes when I'm watching Dimitrov, I'm thinking, I previously wasn't quite able to put my finger on why he's not winning everything easily the way Roger Federer was in 2004. Sometimes I'm thinking, your backhand's sort of better than Federer's. I mean, the forehand isn't, that has to be said, but it's not far off. You know, skill-wise, he has everything. He's a physical colossus now, and it's that chip in the brain which tells you, which makes you make the right decisions at the right time. And he's having to learn it analog. No, he doesn't have it digitally. Federer has it digitally. It's hardwired. Dimitrov's having to learn it the analog way, and Valverde is helping him do that, and I'm finding it very interesting seeing that process of he's having to override the hard wiring of his brain, and that sort of learning, you know, bread and butter patterns of play is a very, very good way of doing that, making that instinctive. But anyway,
I think I'm going to have a word with Danny Valverde, see if he can give me a few tips of our rematch, because, you know, he seems to have cracked it.
I mean, it's a blooming good advert for Danny Valverde's abilities as a coach, that's for sure. Looking ahead to, it says next week, but it's not really a look ahead because it's all started. Juan Martín Del Potro returning to ATP World Tour action in Delray Beach. And that's a real coup for Delray Beach, because as charming an event as that is, and I've been to it many times for the ATP Champions Tour, and it is it's a delightful town. If you're considering a holiday on the Florida coast, you can't do any better than Delray Beach. It is delightful, but it's one of the lower profile, sort of lower rent events on the ATP World Tour, it has to be said. They don't tend to get the biggest names, and they've suffered so much over the years from pullouts, because they tend to sort of spend big appearance fees wise on just one or two big names, and they always seem to have pulled out over the years. I remember being there, I think it was 2 years ago, when Del Potro was supposed to make one of his comebacks and Cilic was their other top player, and both of them pulled out on the same day, and it was just devastating. I really felt for them that day. So this is a big deal for them. I'm at risk of sounding patronising, like I was with talking about Sofia last week. I love the event, I really do. I love the charming low-keyness of it, but I'm pleased that they're having a bit of a moment in the sun with Del Potro coming back there.
I'd agree, and I think it's the perfect tournament for him to come back into, because it isn't too much intensity in its surroundings and too much expectation. Yes, I mean, I suppose he's expected to win and go far, but I think it's perfect for him. I think he can probably end up getting a couple of good wins, you know, without having to do too much.
Raonic is the top seed there. He's probably the favourite to win it overall. But yeah, great for them to have Raonic as well. Down in Rio de Janeiro, David, who have we got? We've got Kei Nishikori and Dominic Thiem. That's who's playing. They're headlining in Rio. What is Dominic Thiem doing in Rio, David?
I don't know. I mean, we've had this debate so many times. I mean, he had a good win over Zverev last week, coming from behind. He went 4-love down in the first set, but I just...
And he lost to Pierre Hugobert. What's he doing?
Oh, come on. Pierre Hugobert is actually a very good player.
He's a double specialist, and he's not as good as Dominic Thiem, and Dominic Thiem should not be losing that. He shouldn't be getting to semi-finals facing Pierre Hugobert and losing.
I would take issue with the idea that Pierre Hugobert is just a double specialist. He is a very, very good doubles player, but according to people that I've heard, and Mark Pecci was one of these commentating on that match, I think, actually, he said this guy should be... I can't remember what he said, whether it was top 30 or top 50, but like...
I'd agree with that. Dominic Thiem should still be winning that match.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time he should. I think on that... It's indoors, isn't it, Rotterdam? So I think that is a small element of why that might happen. But I mean, look, you're right. I saw, that's the first time I ever saw Thiem play was in Rotterdam against Andy Murray about 3 or 4 years ago, and he was sensational. There's no question he can play on that surface and do very well. I don't get his scheduling. I don't get it. I asked him in the Australian Open, as we know. I still don't 100% feel like I understand it. I certainly don't agree with it. I mean, look, all due credit to him, if it's his career, do what you like, but I don't think it gives him the best chance of maximising his results at the biggest tournaments.
I think it's fair to say that I agree with you, David. I think they're wanting to close the particular coffee shop that we're in, so better wind up. We're on to the Any Other Business portion of my agenda, and in there we have Davis Cup. The surface and venue has been picked for the GB France Davis Cup quarterfinal, and predictably it's on clay, and it is in Rouen, a town that I have been to, David. It's in Rouen.
What's it like?
It's all right. It's all right.
D- Del Potro's got Kevin
Anderson. Paris, let's put it that way.
You know, I said he'd get some easy wins. Kevin Anderson first round, that's quite tough, isn't it?
Quite tough, but Kevin Anderson's been out injured, hasn't he? He lives in Delray Beach, incidentally, Kevin Anderson. Yeah. He could live anywhere. That's what I'm saying. It's a delightful place. And finally, on my any other business list.
So, Rouen's all right, though?
It's all right, yeah. It's not on anyone's holiday destination list, I don't think, but... Tweet in if it is on your holiday destination list at Tennis Podcast. Finally, on my any other business, we have to get this in. I've got nothing to say about it, really, other than Roger Federer has tweeted a photo of himself with Bear Grylls filming Running Wild. He looks quite the outdoor adventurer. In fact, he looks like he's playing perhaps some kind of tennis in the snow with Bear Grylls. It's a great picture. I mean, Barack Obama's done Running Wild with Bear Grylls, so it's only fair that Roger Federer should get an invitation, isn't it?
Federer, we've seen a bit more of this of late, haven't we? It's sort of, I don't know whether this got promoted ahead of time or whether he just literally turned up in the mountains with Bear Grylls and said, oh, here we are, you know. I mean, I know it's going to be filmed on NBC and Discovery, I believe, this stuff that Federer is doing out there, but it does appear to me that he's almost like experimenting with life on almost a daily basis at the moment. He's just feels to me like he's almost using tennis as his way to just drum up his bucket list and fulfill all of his dreams in life, you know. And there he is. I mean, you never really see Federer looking anything other than absolutely delighted to be who he is, really.
Why wouldn't you be delighted to be Roger Federer? As my brother said when I sent him the photo of Roger Federer with Bear Grylls, he said, that's what life is for Roger now, isn't it? It is lifetime achievement awards and glacier hiking with Bear Grylls, with the odd bit of tennis here and there. I mean, yeah, what a great recipe for life. Congratulations, Roger Federer. I'm going to finish on a fun Bear Grylls story, that a tennis-related Bear Grylls story I have for you. And I have to delve very deep into my shame well for this story, so I hope you appreciate, Tennis Podcast listeners, what I'm about to tell you, which is that Annabelle Croft, off the telly, David, of Eurosport fame, Annabelle Croft is a very good friend, a personal friend of Bear Grylls. They've recently been on holiday together in the Caribbean. They are not just the two of them, families. They are very, very good friends and go back many years.
And we're kind of friendly with Annabelle, so we're kind of friends with Bear Grylls.
No, stop it, David. Stop you right there once you've heard this story. Anyway, Bear Grylls, when Annabelle was presenting live at Wimbledon, alongside me a couple of years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, Bear Grylls came to Wimbledon. And Annabelle said to the producer, she said, oh, he's a good friend of mine. I'm sure he'll come up to the studio if I ask him. And obviously the producer said, yes, great. Let's get Bear Grylls up here. And for some reason in my head, I thought my brother was a big fan of Bear Grylls. It turns out, I mean, he likes Bear Grylls. He thinks he's fine, but he's not a massive fan. He's a fan of the other one on Discovery, Ian Stafford. Apparently he's Ian Stafford, something Stafford, Clive Stafford. There's apparently a far more hardcore bloke on Discovery that makes Bear Grylls look like a wet blanket. But anyway, Annabelle said, okay, I'll text him. But anyway, Annabelle had to go on air because, you know, live telly on live at Wimbledon. So she gave him my number. So no, she texted him and checked that he was okay to do it. He said, yes, that's fine. And then passed on his number to me to do the finer details of the arranging. Anyway, diddle-a-dah. Arranged for, texted Bear, not his real name, I'm sure. He came on the set live at Wimbledon. He was great. And then he left and everyone was delighted. I texted my brother to say, with the exact words, I just met Bear Grylls, Spice World, and accidentally sent that text to Bear Grylls.
Did he reply?
He did not reply.
How disappointing.
You'd think he could have replied. I mean, he would have known that I had realised and was dying inside. I mean, I can't watch him on the telly. I just die inside every time.
What does Spice World mean?
It's an Alan Partridge quote. It's what you say when you're delighted with something. Spice World.
Oh. I see.
It's like back of the net or something like that. Anyway, there we go. I've delved into my shame well to bring you all the great anecdotes here on the Tennis Podcast. It is getting a bit chilly. Having said that, the conditions were tropical in Marylebone Station. It is getting a bit chilly because it's coming up to 9 p.m. The lengths we go to, guys, to bring you this fantastic tennis radio show. We're going to wrap up. It has been a pleasure to be with you. The Tennis Podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We will be back next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.